So instead of flying across to just work for, you know, a month or something with data to get an exhibition up, I decided to escape Victoria and my family and run off to Western Australia in my car. And I had a trailer and a tent, and I bought my three dogs, of course. And I just drove. I really enjoyed myself. Just didn't get anxious at all because I was focused on writing the songs and creating the works, and kept writing as I was driving. I was sort of thinking and writing little notes in my phone notes, you know. And I know you're not supposed to do that, but there wasn't much cars on the road.
That's right. I won't tell anyone.
And then I'd sit outside of my tent at night looking at the stars and making up other songs, other lines and lyrics. And then I stayed at Salmon Gums for a week and I made a piece of artwork out of sticks and stones and different things and some acrylic paints and materials.
We're travelling on Salmon Gums to Auburn. Surprise, surprise, I'm travelling on dirt. Where's the highway gone? Oh, Google's cutting a corner, cutting off escalators. No accommodation there at all. 2 hours on dirt, we made it through. We're travelling on Albany to Margaret River. No mozzies, low wind, low heat, delightful forests growing to the road's edge. Taking me there, we're going there, we're travelling on Margaret River to Fremantle. We've made it safely to our destination.
I think there's obviously this intrigue for me looking on this record and looking that you've created all these works on the road. Do you think the road travelling and being away from Melbourne and away from your family, as you say, you know, do you think that allows the creativity to exist, the writing, the sort of, you know, artist space to exist in a different way while you're travelling?
Yeah, I'm writing my PhD on this at the moment through RMIT University about how my mental health is expressed through my art and my art through my mental health. I had been quite unwell, like my delusions about my family and, I'm not going to call them delusions, I'm calling them unverifiable life experiences.
I like that.
And that's what I'm calling them in my PhD. We had a meeting yesterday. And I had a lot of that going on in my head, unverifiable life experiences. So memory, whether you can call them memories, whether they're fantasies, I don't really know. Psychiatrists tend to just say they're all delusional and, you know, you've made it all up. But who are they to say? They don't know my life story. So, you know. So I had been quite unwell and then driving off with the dog, leaving everything behind, was so good for me, and just being on the road and just being with nature. Then you camp and then walk down to the beach or go for a walk in the bush or all that stimulates my thinking, and I was focused more on the writing and the songs and the art and what I could see and feel and sense in the environment and in the history of the environment. You know, all those things I think about as I'm driving along and as I stop.
In this, on the record, you do talk about how the Nullarbor isn't what you expected it to be. People talk about it as if it's this really barren place, this really flat plain. But you speak about how it wasn't that at all. There was life there, right?
I was amazed at how many trees and shrubs and varieties and species of plant and how tall the trees were, really. Yeah, as you drive through, the vegetation varies a lot. And so when I got to the coast, I was dazzled by the flowers there and the different, the beauty of the vegetation on the coast. But the vegetation along the Nullarbor, driving along the Nullarbor, was also bedazzling to me in its own rich way, you know, its own very diverse way. And perhaps that's the way I've learnt to look at things, because I'm a little bit diverse myself and have to live with these challenges in my head all the time. So I am a bit different to other people in how much I can take on and how stress impacts me and so different things like that.
The places that you do speak about on the record feel like characters to me. That you have a kinship with these places that you move through, or maybe you feel friction with them, or you're trying to understand them. And I really like that across the record you do inhabit multiple voices, multiple perspectives, and lots of temporalities, not only to explore experiences of folks like yourself in regards to mental health and how that might interact with your art. And I do want to talk about that in a little bit, but what I'm really curious about is how these places feel like characters, people of these places, individuals swept up by their history, or people swept up by institutions in these places. These kind of get a space on this record. When you're moving through those places, is it a priority to try and understand the people of it too, or are you more interested in the landscape?
No, I'm very open to the landscape speaking to me, for instance. Like John Olson, the famous painter, says he sits in the environment and waits till it speaks to him. Many artists talk about how nature and the environment, the ecosystem, all these things talk to them. And you know, I'm very interested in history and very interested in people, of course, because people are what make, well, people dominate this earth, you know, and people who are destroying and saving at the same time. I got a lovely photo at one of the campsites where I went for a walk, and there was all these rusty old tins, and you know, where some bushy had camped for a long time and just dump their tins and their baked bean tins lost all their labels and gone all rusty. And, you know, there's something from history, and some of the old fencing and cattle runs and different things, you know, that weren't used anymore. You know, these things tell stories about past people who've lived in these things, places and endured, you know.
Nothing trees, no trees, mallees, saltbush grasses inhabit the Nullarbor Plain. The explorer John Eyre saw a treeless plain. His author Kingsley wrote a hideous anomaly, a blot on the face of nature, the sort of place one gets to in a bad, bad dream. E.A. Delisa named the Nullarbor in 1865. The First Nations people called it Undiri, meaning the waterless. It's 1,100 kilometres from east to west, contains 390 species of plant, diverse habitats for rare animals and birds. Few people drive the Nullarbor, Most people believe the myth of a vast, dry, endless, treeless plain. I saw varied habitats across the ecosystem, reflecting the depth of soil over the ancient limestone cast. Vast open grassy plains, chopped up, blackened, turned soils, blue bush shrubs and swathes of stumpy mallee trees. My skin of dust acquired while camping, my shoeless feet remind me of seasonal walking nomadic indigenous tribes, cultivating, refreshing themselves in the underground limestone caves and streams. Natives were removed in the 1950s before the Maralinga tests. Native people carried only essentials, took only essentials for sustenance and life. Peoples, colonizers, unvoiced, unpeopled, unlanded, unpeopled, peoples not seen. Nala abor, no trees, untrees. Seed as suitable for the taking.
Stories, good and bad, and try and think things through. So I'm not just putting down people's efforts or being judgmental. I'm trying to give a perspective of good and bad, of the grey shadows of grey of our world, you know, and our lives and how we struggle and how we've been challenged, you know, to make this country our home, but at the same time we've taken someone else's home.
Alongside this interest in a collective experience and the people of the country, the people that motivate your work, also this record, of course, deals with your own troubles and kind of mediates this space between mental health and arts and how they kind of inform each other. In particular, of course, speaking about your experience with schizophrenia. And I love this sentiment that you share across most of your work, which is that, you know, you've heard voices for most of your life and you're trying to challenge this sort of institutional pathologizing of this experience.
All my life I've believed that I could be normal. Now, it's interesting because when you're a child, and there was a beautiful work in the Timeless Festival by Patrick Gunasekera, and he addressed this issue by interviewing people, and he played all of Lily Boulanger's teenage compositions and adolescent compositions, her preludes, probably written as a young woman. She died at 24. But he interviewed people with disabilities and talked about this issue of how our parents push us and how they want us to be normal, you know, and how they set standards that just make us ill because they're pushing us constantly and we just, you know, we get ill. And then we have to pick up the pieces and start all over again. You know, what is the point of a diagnosis like schizophrenia that's so destructive? And you know, then your psychiatrist tells. One of them told me that your whole past has been a delusion. Everything I've believed about myself and my family is delusional. She tried to argue, when you try to speak your mind about who you believe you are and what you believe your thoughts are about, there's peer workers all around Australia and they're becoming more vocal and they're becoming more confident in speaking out against the pathologising of mental health issues. I speak out and have always spoken out since I started working in the mental health field as a peer worker, where I was allowed to tell my story. I've always told the truth of my story, or what I believe to be the truth of my story. You know, it's unverifiable, some of it.
I love this idea of your work being this cathartic expression of storytelling and this sort of form of recovery in itself, which feels really important and feels really validating for a lot of people. It's really evident on songs like Fight, Flight, Freeze. That's a really validating song for a lot of folks.
And the universe, you know, neuroscience to the brain. And fight, flight, freeze is they're the basic the basic behaviours or responses people have to a lot of distress or trauma. And some of these neuroscientists, they were talking about the fight, flight, freeze responses and how they relate to the polyvagal nervous system. And I, as well as writing that song, I wrote the Polyvagal Body song, which is the last one on the album. And I created a little video of body, like a stop animation, and the body, and then the heart would inflate, and the next shot the liver's inflating, and the next shot the spleen's inflating, and that's how your polyvagal nervous system works. There's two sides to it, the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. And one of the sides makes your functioning go faster, breathing faster, heart rate faster, and the other side slows you down to the point of freezing.
Further stress, ongoing emotional distress leads to dissociation, catatonia, the body slows right down. Parasympathetic, polyvagal nervous system balance is the goal. Acknowledge your emotions, be true to your feelings, be well, stay well, know your body's senses.
It feels like humour is a huge priority for you.
Yeah, I love laughing and making jokes.
I think it makes the work more accessible. Not that it needs to be. I don't think we need to, you know, sugarcoat things or wrap them in cotton wool so that people are more interested in hearing them. But I really like that there's this sort of complementary work going on the record. There's this almost joyous, playful instrumentation and these wonderful experimental moments and these kind of silly, very funny moments of lyricism from you. But I really like the prioritisation of joy and humour on this record too.
Great. That's really good. I'm glad to hear. Because, you know, with humour, something might be funny to me and it's not necessarily funny to someone else. So, you know, it's a bit of a risky take. But I'm glad you said that's really affirming.
Yeah. I think this is a really special record and I'm really pleased to have some time to speak to you this morning. Thank you so much for making the time and I hope the rest of your journey is all right. You have stopped on the side of the road to talk to us today, which I think seems very poetic for an album that was written on the road.
I love travelling and getting around a bit. You're always driving, then. You've got to have a car. But thank you, Pam. Thank you so much for talking to me and for liking my record. I really appreciate that.